Now we're holding on to Zion Ahmed Bey's second line from the bottom. We learned yesterday about when Chizkiyahu was buried, that they buried him B'male Kibre B'nei David. And we said B'male meant in the best quality part of the area where the family of David was buried, namely next to David and Shlomo. We mentioned that because in the Mishnah, we said that, yeah, that a Mazik has to pay Minha Aliyah. So we explained that Minha Aliyah similarly means from the best of his possessions, the best of his karka, or in the case of Metalplin, we said anything is considered Meitav. So now, having mentioned that, yep. So now the Gemara darshens the second half of the same pasuk when it says Vayikru B'male Kibre B'nei David. So the pasuk continues afterwards. The Chavod
Where is the grave?
What?
Where is the grave? Where is the grave of David and Shlomo?
It's a good question. I mean, obviously, there's some place in the city of Yerushalayim. In general, there's a Mishnah, and later on in the Masecht, actually, we're going to learn that in general, you're not allowed to bury people in Yerushalayim except for the graves of David, of the royal tombs over there were allowed to remain. Where they are in what's modern-day Yerushalayim or near it, I don't think we know for sure. Keep in mind, of course, that not all of what was the city of Yerushalayim at that time is now within the walls. Parts of it are nowadays outside the walls, and they have all the excavations that are going on over there south of the city of Yerushalayim. Traditionally, you know, you have on Har Tzion, and there's a place that they identify as David's Kever. Whether it is, in fact, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. How come we don't know? I mean, it seems so... So unusual and unlikely that
well, on the contrary, when you consider how many times we've gone into Golos and how many times the city has been destroyed and rebuilt and whatever, the wonder is that we know anything over there. And we know where the Harabais is, and that's really we know where certain other landmarks like Harazesim are. That's really about it. To know an individual place like that, which has probably been destroyed and rebuilt and covered over and uncovered and whatever so many times, if anything, we're not going to know it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so the pasuk says, "B'chavod asuloi b'mose." They gave Chizkiyahu great honor when he died. So what does that expression mean? Malamacho yeshiva yeshiva al kivroi. This teaches us that they set up a yeshiva, Talmidim, who would be sitting and learning Torah by his kever. Now, the reason why they did that for him, particularly Tosfos points out that he famously spread knowledge of Torah throughout the Jewish people. Like we touched on yesterday, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that he made sure that every single man, woman, and child in Eretz Yisrael is learning Torah and even becomes an expert in Torah, and that saved them ultimately from Sancheirev. So in recognition of that, then they put a yeshiva by his grave. Actually, now Tosfos says it doesn't mean literally on top of, because that would be a problem called loyeg larosh, as we know, the same way, for example, you're not allowed to wear tzitzis when you visit a beis hakvaris, because like saying, it's like mocking the dead, how we can do this mitzvah and you can't, the same way it would be with this. So therefore, Tosfos says it would have to be that it was four amos away from the kever, where there's not such an issue of loyeg larosh. On the other hand, there are rishonim, Tosfos, Rabbeinu Peretz says that no, in this case, where they're doing it for his honor and they're doing it because he was such a distinguished Talmid Chacham, then therefore it might even be allowed within four amos of the grave. So here the Gemara is saying that they did that for Chizkiyahu. The Rambam seems to say that they do that in general for Jewish kings. Anyway, Pligi bar Rab Nosson and Rabbanan. Now Rab Nosson and the Chachamim disagree. How long did they keep that yeshiva there? Chad Omer Shlosha. One says that they kept him for 3 days. But Chad Omer Shiva. The other one says they kept it. They kept those Talmidim learning there for 7 days. But Amilo Shloshim, or others say 30 days. Those are, as we know, those are actually the stages of Avelos. You have 3 days in which a person is expected to be crying. Then 7 days to finish off Shiva, and then Shloshim. So corresponding to those is why they have the different number. Why you have the different opinions of how long those Talmidim sat there learning Torah. Some more on this topic. We learn in a braisa that when it says again, that when it says that they did honor to him when he passed away, and this is an expression we find only by Chizkiyahu. We don't find it by any other. We don't find it by any other king. So therefore, obviously, it means the Gemara has to assume there's something unusual about it. So that's why first we were saying Yeshiva Yeshiva Al Kivrei, but now we're saying something else. So this refers to Chizkiyah. Rashi says it doesn't really need to say that. Obviously, we know the pasuk is talking about Chizkiyah. That's just the style of the Gemara. Anyway, she yotzel of fun of shisho shloshim shisha elof chalutze kosef. when he passed away and they had his levaya, there were 36,000 people going out in front of him with their shoulders uncovered. The way they used to do it back then was when they tore kriya, not only did they tear kriya, but also they'd take the arm out of the sleeve so that the shoulder would be bare. We find in different places in Moed Katan, it mentions it, in Masechta Smachos, it mentions it, that this is how they would do it as a gesture of mourning. So therefore, here you had 36,000 people doing that in front of Chizkiyahu. Why 36,000? Tosfos points out, since the pasuk is v'chavod also loy b'moisei, the word loy is gematria 36. So since obviously it wasn't just 36 people, so therefore we assume it was 36,000. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Omelei Rabbi Nechemya, but Rabbi Nechemya says, what's the big deal of that? V'alo lefnei Achav also came. Don't we find they did the same kind of thing when Achav died? They also, Tosfos points out, we have in other places where it says that they made a tremendous hesped for him. To be sure, he was a Rosha, but he still had, there were a lot of people on his side, so they were the ones who mourned for him and bared their shoulders and so forth. So in that case, there's nothing special about that they did that for Chizkiyahu as well. Ella, rather, Rabbi Nechemya says the special cover that they did for Chizkiyahu is shehinichu sefer Torah al mitosei. They put a sefer Torah on his bier, on the bed, on the stretcher on which they were carrying out his body. But Omru, and they said kiyim zeh mashakosu bazeh. Chizkiyahu kept what it says in the Torah, and that was the honor, and that was the honor that they did for him. So Rav Nechemya says that was obviously they didn't do that for Achav. You can't say that Achav kept the Torah. He was a Rosha. So therefore, that was the unique honor that they did for Chizkiyahu. So the Gemara says, "V'ha'idna nami abdin hachi." So what? Nowadays we do that as well. So what's the special thing for Chizkiyahu? And the answer is, "Apuki makkinan anuchi leimanchinan." Sure, in later times when a great Talmud Chacham passes away, we bring out a sefer Torah by his levaya. We don't actually put it on the beer. Here they actually put it on that. The Borisema Anuchi Nami Manchinan, or you could say maybe even we do put it on the beer, on the stretcher. Kiyim Loyamrinan, but we don't actually make that announcement that he observed everything that it says in the Torah, whereas by Chizkiyahu they did. Now, does that mean that Yitaka can't do it for anything for anybody else? There are Rishonim who learn the Nimuka Yosef here on the Rif says if you have in later times a Talmud Chacham where you know that he spread Torah to the same degree that Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda did, then sure you could say this announcement for him also. When we say we don't say it, we mean that we mean there's very few people who are of that caliber. On the other hand, other Mefarshim say that no, with Chizkiyahu, you have the unique thing that not just that he kept the mitzvahs, lots of people keep mitzvahs, but that he got the entire Jewish people to, like we said, he put in the sword by the Bnei Medrash and made it that every single woman, man, woman, and child was learning Torah, and that's unprecedented, and you never have anything like that again. Even in later times, you had people who spread tremendous knowledge of Torah among the Jewish people, but not to that degree. Okay, the Gemara says, Omer Rabbi Baba Chana. So now the Gemara continues on this topic that Rabbi Baba Chana says, which is going to end up giving us another answer as well. Have a zilna bahadei de Rabbi Yechanan l'mishal shmaita. One time I was walking together with Rabbi Yechanan because I was asking him something in Torah. Bahadei means with him. A different girsa, it says on the side here, is basrei. I was going behind him because the Gemara says elsewhere that a Talmud shouldn't walk right next to his Rebbe. He should walk a little bit behind him. Anyway, whatever the case, Rabbi Baba Chana says he was a Talmud, Rabbi Yochanan was the Rebbe, so he was walking with or behind Rabbi Yochanan because he was asking him something in Torah. He have a oyel lebeis hakisei. Then there came a point when Rabbi Yochanan had to stop and go to the bathroom. If I had asked him something in Torah just before. Or I asked him this particular thing about with Chizkiyahu, what was the covered gadol, and what's the big deal about that they put a sefer Torah on his beer when they do that for other people as well. Anyway, so I had asked him that. Loik Poshitlon, so he didn't answer the question, Adam Moshi Yode, until after he had come out of the bathroom, he had washed his hands, Umanach Tfilin, he put on Tfilin, Umavarich, and he said the bracha. Rabbi Yaakov Emden brings over here in his notes that there was somebody who wanted to explain that it means he said the bracha asher yotzar, but Rabbi Yaakov Emden says no, it means that he said the bracha on tefillin. That's if you take that you have a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. If you take off tefillin for a little while, you're not necessarily obligated to make the bracha again when you put them on, unless the situation, unless either you took them off for a while and when Masiach das from them, or you're in a situation where you can't wear them, which is over here. You can't wear tefillin in the bathroom. Therefore, when he comes out of the bathroom, you'd have to make a new bracha on them. Anyway, after finishing all of that, Rahadur Amalon, then after that, Rabbi Yochanan gave me a different answer. I feel Kiyam Amrinan. We might even say by a Talmud Chacham in later generations that he fulfilled what it says in the Torah. So maybe they would in fact put a Sefer Torah on his coffin and even say Kiyam Zeh, like they said by Chizkiyahu, but limit Loyam Rinan, but to say that he taught Torah to other people, that we don't do. That was unique to Chizkiyahu. So that's another answer. So far we have several answers. One is that they again, according to Rabbi Yehuda in the Braisa, there's nothing to talk about. We're not talking about Sifrei Torah at all. We're talking about the number of mourners by his Leviah. According to Rabbi Nechemiah, that we're talking about the honor that they did him involved a Sefer Torah. So we have one possibility is by Chizkiyahu uniquely they put it on his mitzvah, which they don't do for others. The second possibility was we said that they do put it for others, but they don't say kiyam for others. And now Rabbi Yochanan is saying a third possibility for others. They may even say kiyam, but they're not going to say limit. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? So does that imply that learning or teaching Torah is greater than observing it? Well, I'm a Mao, don't we learn in the Gemara? We learned it most recently in Kiddushin. Godol limud Torah. Learning Torah is great. This is, by the way, the word limud over here is a change of the censor. It's really supposed to be Talmud. For some reason, at some point, the Christians decided they didn't like the word Talmud. And so in many places, the censor has changed the word Talmud to limud or shas or other things like that. Anyway, Godol limud or Talmud, really. Shat Talmud maybe the day Maisa, because learning brings you to Maisa. So you see, on the face of it, that Maisa is greater. So what do you mean that we say Kiyim for other people, but we don't say limit when Kiyim is greater? So the answer is Loikasha Hola Migmar Hola Agmuri. There's a difference between learning Torah and teaching it. When it comes to learning Torah, sure, then Maisa of mitzvahs is greater than learning Torah. We actually have in Tanya in these days where the Alter Rebbe is talking about that idea, why it is that Maisa of mitzvahs in a way is greater than learning Torah. You're bringing down higher levels of other course into the world. But when we're talking about teaching other people, that's greater than Maisa. So that's what we're saying, that kind of honor, to say that kind of compliment, to say that he taught Torah to others, that they did only for Chizkiyahu. Now that's according to Rashi's explanation. Tosfos points out on the face of it, in Kiddushin, the Gemara says the other way around over there. When we say Talmud Gadol Shel Megillah De Maisa, doesn't that show that Fakert was saying that learning Torah is greater? So Tosfos gives a couple of answers. First of all, in Kiddushin, Tosfos discusses over there the difference is when is Talmud greater than Maisa if you haven't learned yet. Loyam Oretz Chosid. After all, you can't do mitzvahs if you don't know what they are. So therefore you have to learn first. Here we're talking about where you already have learned and you already know, then Maisa mitzvahs is greater. Anyway, Tosfos is saying over here, what Tosfos over here says, the first explanation is that once we say Kiyim, he fulfilled the Torah, that automatically includes that he learned. How would he have been able to fulfill the mitzvahs if he hadn't learned them? So then the answer is that there's a difference between learning and teaching, because when you teach other people, you bring them to Maisa, and then that's greater. Then Tosfos brings a girsa from She'iltis, from the famous Sefer She'iltis, the Rabbi Choy Goin, a Sefer from one of the early Goinim, where he has a different girsa in the Gemara over here. The girsa is not that we're talking about kiyam versus limud. Rather, the question is not so much from Rabbi Yochanan's explanation, but rather from what Rabbi Yochanan did. We were saying that Rabbi Yochanan, after he got out of the bathroom, he put on tefillin, and only then he gave them the answer in Torah. So the question is, isn't teaching Torah greater than Maisa? Why doesn't he answer them the question first and then put on tefillin? And the answer is that when it comes to that Faker, She'iltis learns the other way around. To learn for yourself is greater. Therefore, yes, if it was a matter of learning for himself, he would have done that first before putting back on his tefillin. But to teach other people is not as important. Therefore, he first put on the tefillin and only then he taught them by answering the question. So that's a different
gear set. That seems to contradict the honor that was given to Chizkiyahu. As you said previously, he reached a degree of teaching the people that no one else did. So how do you reconcile that?
Well, so that's the thing. Tosfos is mentioning that the Sheiltos does not have the Geirus over here. The Gemara is saying anything about Kiyam Amrinan Limud Loy Amrinan. The Gemara is stopping with the point that the Gemara has stopped with the point that for most people, we don't even say Kiyam. The Gemara has stopped over there. For Chizkiyahu, we said Kiyam Zem Ashakasa Bazeh. For other people, we don't. Then, according to Sheiltos, the next piece with Rabbi Baba Chana talking about what Rabbi Yechanan did is not directly bearing on the difference between what they did for Chizkiyahu, but for others, it's sort of an indirect thing. Well, you're telling me that Kiyam is the greatest thing you can say for a person, but isn't? But how could that be if we see that if we how is it given that we say Godol Talmud Shamevi the Day Ma'aseh, then in Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Baba Chana's case, why did he put on tefillin first? And the answer is because when it comes to teaching others, then doing a mitzvah is greater than teaching others. So in other words, that's not so. According to his Girsa, the Gemara is not giving another answer of what they did by Chizkiyahu. Rather, the Gemara is sort of dealing with a side point. You're telling me Kiyam that we say by other people. We say Kiyam, we don't say Kiyam, Zem Ashakasa Bazeh, whereas by Chizkiyahu they did. Well, what's the greatness of Kiyam? Why didn't they say something greater? And the answer is because of the difference between learning and teaching.
Kiyam is what? It's teaching?
Kiyam means fulfilling the mitzvahs. Limit means teaching the mitzvahs.
One second, fulfill the mitzvahs for yourself or teaching others?
So that's the thing. The Girsa that we have in front of us in the Gemara over here is the Gemara is saying that to teach other people Torah is greater than Maisa HaMitzvahs. That's according to Rashi's understanding. So again, according to Tosfos, we have two other ways of understanding what the Gemara is saying. One is that doesn't Kiyam automatically include that he learned the mitzvahs? And the answer is true, but it doesn't necessarily include that he taught. So therefore, an answer would be that we have to say by Chizkiyahu, they said he taught them, which just by saying Kiyam wouldn't be enough for us to know that. And then again, the other Girsa in Tosfos using Sheiltos is we're b'chlal not really addressing the question of anymore, the question of what we said by Chizkiyahu. We're just asking the question, why are we using the word Kiyam? Why are we not using the greater, why are we not using the greater advantage that he taught? And the answer is because teaching Torah is not on as high as level as keeping it himself. And therefore, and we see that from Rabbi Yochanan's own behavior, where he first put on tefillin to fulfill the mitzvah, and only then did he teach his Talmidim.
Can't you say that you cannot teach really if you don't do it yourself? So
we're not talking about where you wouldn't do the mitzvah at all. Of course not. I mean, there you have what the Gemara says in Yevamos, kol ha'omer ein li Torah, afilu the Torah ein lo. If a person says, I'm only going to learn Torah, I'm not going to bother doing the mitzvahs. No, here we're talking about, for example, Rabbi Yochanan. Look, I mean, he'd still be fulfilling the mitzvah of tefillin if he put him on after he taught his Talmidim. He didn't want to be without the mitzvah for any longer than necessary. So that's like a higher level of fulfillment than the mitzvah. Not that otherwise he wouldn't have been doing it at all. All right, anyway, we need to go on. The Gemara continues now with a drasha not directly related to what we said before, but Pashtus, the Gemara is bringing this in because we have a drasha on the pasuk Meshalchei Regel Asher V'Achamur, which we brought at the beginning of the perek to talk about where we learn from it the concept of Shein of Shein V'Regel that we said in the Psukim in Mishpatim when it says about the damages of Shein V'Regel, it doesn't spell out what exactly those are, but we have a pasuk. We said there it says v'shilachas be'iroi, and here you have the word m'shalchei regel. So now the Gemara is bringing a drasha on that pasuk. So Amar Rabbi Yechon Meshum Rabbi Shimon Yechai, my bichtiv ashreichem zorei al kamoyim. The pasuk says, happy are you who plant by all the water, m'shalchei regel asher v'achamer, who let loose the foot of the ox and the donkey. Poshet Pshat, and in context of the Pasuk, the Navi is talking about when the Jewish people are fulfilling what Hashem wants, and Hashem gives them great brachas, and Hashem gives them plenty of water and plenty of rain, and they can turn their animals loose to go and graze in the fields, in their own fields, that is, and there's plenty for them to eat. But why does it mention specifically Asher V'Achamer? So it means kola osek b'torah v'gmilas chasadim. Anybody who was involved in learning Torah and in doing gmilas chasadim, zoicha l'nachos shnei shvatim, he will be zoicha to the inheritance of two shvatim, namely of Yosef and Yisachar, who are compared respectively to a shur and a chamur. We know in Moshe's brachas he compares Shevet Yosef to an ox, and Yaakov in his brachas compares Yisachar to a donkey, Yisachar chamur garim. So now this person who does Torah and Gmilas Chasadim, Ashreichem Zorei Al Komoyim refers, as the Gemara is going to explain, where the word Zorei and Mayim refer to Gmilas Chasadim and Torah respectively, so he's Zorecha to the brachas of those two Shvatim. So in other words, it actually explains, we understand the pasuk because of the planting that you do by all waters, therefore your feet are going to be sent into the Nachla of the Shur and the Chamur, of Yosef and Yisachar. So first of all, Ashreichem Zorei, as the pasuk says, happy are you who plant. Ve'in Zriya al Tzedakah. The word planting refers to Tzedakah. Shenemar, as we find the different pasuk, Ziru lachem l'tzedakah v'kitzru l'fi chesed. Plant for yourselves Tzedakah and harvest according to chesed, which the Gemara elsewhere explains. For example, it means that a person is paid back by Hashem for his tzedakah in proportion to the chesed that he put into it, because in other words, a person should give tzedakah ba'ayin yafa. The Alter Rebbe talks about in Tanya the idea that when you're giving tzedakah, you're planting seeds in the Olam HaSeh Yonim, which then bear fruit down here. So we see that planting is associated with tzedakah. The ein mayim el Torah, and water refers to Torah. Shenema hoi kol tzomi l'chol ha-mayim, as the Navi says, hey, everyone who's thirsty, go to the water, meaning you're going to connect to Hashem, you're going to connect to Elikos through Torah. So therefore, the Zorei al kol moyim refers to Gemilas Hasadim and Torah. The Zorecha v'nachas shnei shvatim, when we say he's Zorecha to the inheritance of two shvatim, that means Zorecha l'kila ki Yosef, he's Zorecha to a kila like Yosef. Now, the basic meaning of the word kila means a canopy. So Marsha explains over here, it refers to the kind of canopy that a person has around a bed, and a bed being a metaphor for having children, like when we say when we talk about Yaakov, mitose shlema, and we use the same expression in the Baruch HaMakbil, so the bed means having children. So Zoicha l'kila ki Yosef means, therefore, that he's Zoicha to have children, to have many children, like Yosef did. As in fact, we find, Marsha points out, when you have the census of the Shvatim, Shevet Yosef, the second census before they went into Eretz Yisrael in Parshas Pinchas, Shevet Yosef in the aggregate, Menashe and Ephraim, was larger than any of the other Shvatim. So that's the bracha of Kila. There are other Mephoshim who understand Kila as meaning more like Meloshin Kola, like Nichsvavam Kolsa Nafri, means beauty. Like gracefulness and beauty. Dichtiv ben poras Yosef, as the pasuk says, Yosef is a graceful son. Ben poras Yosef, bonus tzoder alei shur. The women of Mitzrayim walked along the walls to see him. So that's the kila. So whether we understand Kila as having children, where eventually one of those women over there became his wife, Osnas, and he had children of her, or whether we understand Kila as the beauty and the grace that all the women are looking at him, so we see this person is Zoicha to that. And then this person is also Zoicha to the Bracha and the Nachla of Yisachar, Dichtiv Yisachar Chamor Gorem, as we see the Pasuk says. The point is also the Gemara is Darshaning Bonis Tzada Alei Shur, as also that the word Shur is related to the word Shur. So therefore we see not only in Yosef, and not only in Moshe's Brachas to Shevet Yosef, does he refer to them as a Shur, B'chor Shurei Hodolai, but Yaakov in his Brachas also refers to Shur, a wall, which we're also Darshaning as Shur, meaning an ox. The Zoicha, because he acted in this way, therefore he's Zoicha to the bracha of the ox, Meshachay Regal Asher Vachamer. The Zoicha, Nachlas Yisachar, he's also Zoicha to the inheritance of Yisachar, Dichtiv Yisachar Chamer Gorim, where Yaakov says that Yisachar is like a strong bone donkey. One point of it is the Ravid makes a point that we find in Pesukim that the territories of Yosef and Yisachar in Eretz Yisrael were the most fertile of all the lands in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, when we say the person is Zoicha to these brachas, we mean Poshet that he's Zoicha to very fertile land. There is an interesting explanation, an interesting Chassidish explanation from the Shem Mishmuel, The Socha Trova Rebbe, who says, you know, you have a Gemara and Avodah Zarah that also mentions this pasuk, and it explains that it means that, that he'll be able to control his Yetzirah. So he explains that Gemara actually goes together with this one. There are two kinds of Yetzirah that a person might have, which are similar to a Shur and Chamur. One is Gaiva, because an ox is a very proud kind of animal, and then you have a Taiva for Gashmius, which is represented by the donkey Chamur Meloshin Chumrius. So now this person, because he's Osek Batoro of Mos Hasadim, instead Hashem helps him transform those aspects of the Yetzirah, the Gaiva he ends up using for Kedusha, like a person should, by Yigbal Libe B'dayach Hashem, and the taiva, instead of using this taiva screw in Yonim Gashmiim, he ends up being able to redirect them towards Alakos. So that's the bracha that he has, the bracha of these two shvatim of Shor and Chamor. The Gemara continues. Ista Amri Oivav Noflon Lefanav Ki Yosef. Others say that the dual bracha that he'll get is his enemies will fall before him like Yosef. Dichtib Bahem Ami Minagach Yachtav Afse Oretz. As we find in Moshe's bracha to Yosef, where he says. And we're at the beginning of the parak, we mentioned this pasuk that an ox uses its horns for goring. Here we're saying that actually he's going to gore with his horns. He'll gore the enemies off to the ends of the earth. So the person is zoicha to that bracha. The zoicha the bina ki yisachar. He's also zoicha to have bina to be able to understand one thing in Torah from another. Like yisachar, dichtiv mnei yisachar yoyde bina leitim ladas mayasi Yisrael. As we find from yisachar, there were people with tremendous bina who were able to tell the Jewish people what to do, in particular as far as calculating the calendar. So now the source of Torah and Mos Hasadim is that he has those two brachas as well. Marsha explains. Like this, when we say by Yoshua, for example, we find a lot of times, instead of having to go and fight each individual Knani nation, the Psukim mentioned a few times, and say for Yoshua, that a whole coalition gathered together, and then Yoshua and the Jewish people are able to defeat them in one blow. So that's what we mean. Bahem ami minach yachtav afse aretz, that all together he's able to gore the goyim and push them to the ends of the earth. One of the miracles that Hashem did, right, is that he gave them the idea to come out to come out in large groups like that. And Yeshua, after all, was descended from Yosef. And then you also have that he'll be zoicha to bina to be able to teach people, like we said before, that teaching people Torah is greater than even doing mitzvahs himself. And therefore, that's what Yisachar is able to accomplish. They're able to teach the people Torah, Ladas Mayase Yisrael, to know what the Jewish people should do. And therefore, we see that they had that schus. So now the person who's Osik, the Torah of Mos Hasadim, has that schus. Hadron Alach Abbas. Okay, so now that we've gone through the general rules of Nezikin, now the next few parakim, I'm going to start going through the specifics. In particular, at the end of a previous parak, we learned about the cases that have to pay Nezek Sholem. And we said Shein Regel and then Shermuad and so forth. So now we're going to talk about all five of those in this parak. So the Mishnah starts off, Ketzar HaRegel Mu'edes. How is the foot of an animal Mu'ed? In what way is it Mu'ed? And the answer is L'shaba B'derech Hilucha, in that it breaks things in the normal way that the animal walks. So that's considered, that's regel and chayiv nezek shalim. Tosfos actually wonders, why are we starting with regel rather than with shein? If we're referring to the Mishnah at the end of the previous perek, then that one began. Once we started listing the mu'adin, we started listing shein. So why don't we say shein over here first? So Tosfos says, really, when you get down to it, shein and regel are practically the same thing in the sense they're both learned from the same posik, and they both have very similar dinim, both of them yipater in Rosh Hasharabim. So therefore, and here, since before we said Shein and then Regel, so therefore now it starts with Regel. That's often a style in Mishnayos where you'll have A, then B, then start with B, and then go back to explaining A. The Gemara is going to also point out that within Regel itself, within Shein itself, you have in the later Mishnah when it discusses it, you can have an Av and a Tulda, or rather here with Regel, you have an Av and a Tulda, and with Shein, you have different others, and therefore you have that also. But Tosfos also now learns the first line of this Mishnah differently. Rashi is learning, again, that Ketzar HaRegel Mu'edes is the question, and the answer is L'shaba B'derech Hilucha, and then according to Rashi, then the Mishnah is going on to deal with more details of that. Tosfos learns that no, the whole first line of the Mishnah is the question. Ketzar HaRegel Mu'edes L'shaba B'derech Hilucha, how is it, in what way is Regel Mu'ed to break things as it walks along? And the answer is going to be the next line of the Mishnah, Habehema Mu'edes. So anyway, the Mishnah continues, edis, an animal is moored, lahalach kedarko l'shaber, to walk in the normal way and break things. So now, according to Rashi, this sounds repetitious because the Gemara has already said, the Mishnah has already said, l'shaber b'derech hilucha, and the Gemara is going to ask why the Gemara is repeating it. According to Tosfos, the question is really why we're switching from regal to behema. Why start off ketar a regal mu'edis l'shaba b'derech hilucha, which is the question, and answer habehema mu'edis? Why not just answer? Why use the word behema at all? Say mu'edis l'halach kedarko l'shaba, or not even, we'll just say l'halach kedarko l'shaba. Why even mention the word behema? So the Gemara is going to deal with that question. Anyway, continues the Mishnah, hoisim of etis, if the animal was kicking, which we've learned before that kicking is a tolda of keren, or if pebbles were shooting out from under the animal's feet, so as it walks along, it steps a little bit on a pebble and sends it flying, and that, with the kicking or with the pebble, it breaks kelim, and he's paying chatzin nezek for that. Now, Rashi explained that these are two different things. Meva'etes is a shinui, that's an unusual thing for an animal to kick. Therefore, why is it chatzin nezek? Because it's part of keren. As usual, keren, you're paying chatzin nezek only the first few times, and only once it becomes more do you pay nezek shalom.
It's like walking, especially kicking.
Yeah.
Oh.
As opposed to, on the other hand, tsrodus is not considered a shinui, but we've learned before, and we're going to learn more extensively now in our perek, that tsrodus is a special case where there's a halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, and you end up paying chatzin nezek for it. We discussed that briefly in the previous parak when we're talking about obus and toldos of the obus nezikin, where we said that Rav Chista had said some of the toldos are not like the obus, and he said specifically there is an example where tzrodus is a tolda of regal, and you're not paying for it the same as you would for regal. So now, what is kicking doing over here? Given that kicking is part of keren, and here we're talking about regal. So Tosfos says, okay, because it's similar to tzurus in the sense both of them you're paying chatzin nezek. Various other mafoshim discuss details in that. I mean, the fact is, true, you're paying chatzin nezek for each one, but after all, they are much different. One is because of keren, and therefore it's tam the first few times, and the other one is because of the special din of chatzin nezek tzurus. So they give various other answers. For example, that it's true, but since after all kicking is done with the feet, then therefore the Mishnah mentions that over here. The Rashba, so therefore, since after all it is done with the feet, so therefore the Mishnah is bringing it over here. So that's the Rashba gives that as one answer. And number two is we've learned before that rego, after all, is chayev is potu in Rosh Hashanah and chayev only in chatzara nizek. Where keren, there's no difference. So one thing is the Rashba points out. Now we've had a machlokas a few times already, and we're going to have later on in our parak. Reb Tarfon and the Chachamim, keren in Rosh Hashanah nizek. Are you paying nezek sholim the first few times or not? Reb Tarfon holds yes. The Chachamim hold no. So here the Mishnah wants to tell us like the Chachamim and not like Reb Tarfon. That even though it's in chatzara nizek, nevertheless it's only chatzin nezek. He should have washed his animal, not to go in there, but still, if it gores, or in this case, not gores, it kicks, which is considered part of keren, then nevertheless he's only paying chatzin nezek, not like Reb Tarfon is going to say later on in this perek, where he's going to learn that he pays nezek shalom. That's another reason why the Mishnah would mention it over here.
Is there a case for contract
Yeah, we said, for example, where the place is a place where both of them are allowed to bring their oxen in, or where neither one, depending on Rashi's and Tosfos' Gersois. Yeah. Okay, the Mishnah continues. Dorsal akli v'shavartu. What happens if an animal steps on a keli and breaks it? The nafal akli achav shavrei, and then a piece of that broken keli fell on another one and broke it. So alarishin mashalim nezek shalom ala achin mashalim chatzin nezek. So then he's going to be paying nezek shalom for the first one because that's regal, but the second one is going to be tsurus because tsurus is not only tsurus in general is what's called koichai. He didn't directly break it, but from his koyach came something that something else broke. So the classic example of it is pebbles shooting out from under the animal's feet. But here we have another example where a piece of the keli that it broke fell on another keli. So therefore, the second one is going to be only chatzin nezek. Continues the Mishnah. chickens are also mu'ad. Now b'chlal, later on in the Masechta, the Gemara is going to explain, the Mishnah is going to explain that all this time we've been talking about a shur that causes damage. The fact is the halacha applies equally well to other kinds of animals and birds and whatnot as well. At the end of in the fifth parak, the Mishnah is going to learn it actually from a gzeirah shavah. So that all these dinim apply equally well to other kinds of animals. So here the Mishnah mentions, for example, chickens are mu'ad, lahalach kadaukin al-shaber, that they walk in the normal way and they break things. So again, if a chicken breaks something as it's walking along in the normal way, then the owner is paying nezek sholem. But again, he's potter in Rosh Hashanah for the same reason as we've been discussing. However, hoya dlil kosher baraglov, but if there was a dlil tied onto the animals, tied onto the chicken's feet, by the way, as far as the Dorsalak Kli, Tosfos points out, the chiddush of it is, you would have to ask, of course, it's Surotus, why would we think otherwise? You would think, Tosfos says, if Dorsalak Kli and then a piece of that Kli broke another one, you would think it stepped so forcefully on the first one, so hard on it, that it caused a piece of it to fly off and break another Kli. You would think maybe that would be it meant to be Mazik. We're saying that, no, we don't, shouldn't assume that, and we should assume that it was regal. So that was the chiddush of that part. There is tsuris, but we're saying there's going to be tsuris by chickens as well. But when we said just now in the Mishnah, when we said an animal stepped on a keli and broke it, and then another piece of the keli flew off and broke another one, the chiddush is that we don't say it meant to damage the first keli, and it should be considered keren. We say that it didn't mean to, and therefore it's regal, and therefore it's tsuris.
The first one is that, but the second one also, you would think that
when he broke the first one, it should be considered only chatzi nezek. Maybe it meant to break it. Otherwise, why would it have stomped on it so forcefully that it makes a piece shoot off and break another case? And nevertheless, we still say it's considered. So now, again, so the Mishnah says, "Atam negolim mu'ad in lahalach kedarkin l'shaber." Chickens are mu'ad to walk in the normal way and break. But hayu dlil kosher b'raglav. But if there was a dlil tied to the chicken's feet, Rashi says two possibilities. One is that dlil means anything that's tied to the chicken's feet can be called dlil. So it could be, for example, a piece of string. It could be or whatever. The second possibility, Rashi says, that the girsa is not dlil, but rather dli, which means a bucket. Anyway, so if that was tied to the chicken's feet, And later on, the Gemara is going to explain, Rashi brings it over here, that now the chicken went and threw that thing, the chicken like took with its beak and threw that thing onto something else and broke it. So that would be considered tsuris. Oisha hoya mahadis, or if the chicken was mahadis, where mahadis means, either mahadis means, Rashi explains further on, that it means like dancing around, like the way chickens do on things. Different other mafroshim talk about that it may mean that also like it digs with its claws into the ground, as it often does. Like scratches in the ground, whatever. Maybe, whatever. Anyway, if it's doing that, so if it was doing that and breaking kalim by doing that, mashalim chatzin nezek, then also you're paying chatzin nezek for that because that's also koichai, and therefore it's considered tsuris. So the Gemara says, omale ravina l'roba, hainu regal, hainu behema. Isn't regal and behema the same thing? So, according to Rashi, the question is, once the Mishnah has answered that l'shabbat, once the Mishnah has asked, ketzer regal mu'edis, and the answer is l'shabbat b'derech hilucha, why is it then repeating and saying ha-behema mu'edis? According to Tosfos, the question is, once we have the question, ketzer regal mu'edis, l'shabbat b'derech hilucha, why are we continuing with the word ha-behema mu'edis, rather than just saying l'halach kedavka, without saying the word behema at all? So Rava answers him, Tana Ovis, Vakatoni told us, because the Mishnah wants to mention the Avnezikin, and then the Mishnah wants to mention the Tolda, because you have the Av of Regal, is the animal actually stepping on something with its feet, and then you have the Toldas, which we've learned before, which the Gemara now is going to bring a Braisa soon, that lists those. For example, where it brushed against something with its body while it's walking and damaged it, or you have something attached to the animal, like the bit, like the reins, or something that the animal was carrying, or whatever, and it broke something. Where all of those are told of regal. So therefore, so the Mishnah starts off by saying ketzer regal mu'edis, which is the av, and then it goes on to say abehema mu'edis, meaning the toldos. So Ravina asks, Elameata, Sefer. In that case, then what are you going to say in the Sefer, meaning the following Mishnah on your Testament days? Often the Mishnah assume, often the Gemara assumes that all the Mishnayos in one parak, at least all the ones on the same topic, are all one long continuous Mishnah. So it can use the word Reisha and Sefer to mean what we have as different Mishnayos. Anyway, Dikatoni Hashem Mu'edas, Habehem Mu'edas. There you have where it says the Shein is Mu'ed and the animal is Mu'ed. My Ovis and my Toldus Ikka. What Ovis and what Toldus are there? And you do have toldos of shein, to be sure, but the toldos would be, for example, where the animal rubs against the wall and because it's itchy or whatever, and it enjoys that, and then it accidentally knocks down the wall. So there you can't say that when the Mishnah continues over there, habahema mu'edus, that an animal is mu'ed to eat fruits or vegetables, that would be part of the av of shein. That's not part of the tolda. So what are you saying? That it says first regal and then behemoth to mention the av and the tolda by shein? That wouldn't work, because then the Mishnah should be referring to behemoth and mentioning things that it does with its body, for example, scratching against the wall. So the Gemara says, have a kamahad alei b'bichosa. So Rava answered Ravina kind of jokingly. He said, he says, you know what? Anosh shanoi chada, v'at shani chada. Look, I've explained one Mishnah. You explain the next one. Don't expect me to tell you all the answers. Well, the Gemara says, "V'taimamai taka." What is the reason? Why does the Mishnah use the word regal and then behema and then shein and then behema?
Even though it's
A, B, B, A. No, never mind that. The question is, why are we using the word behema in connection with shein? By regal, fine. We have Rava's explanation that was saying because regal means with its feet, and behema would mean with any other part of its body. But by shein, since later on when it says a behema mu'edus lechol peiros v'yirokos, that it is more to eat fruits and vegetables, which is all part of the av of shein. So what is the word behema they are adding at all? In other words, the question would be, why is the Mishnah there? So Ravina's question was, why is the Mishnah there not saying the expression when it says ketzed av shein mu'edus lechol osaroy lo habehema mu'edus lechol peiros v'yirokos? Why doesn't you say mu'edus lechol peiros v'yirokos? Why use the word behema again? Yeah. The answer is it's av and tolda, but there you're not mentioning a tolda of shade because you're just mentioning the av again because you're mentioning eating peiros v'yirokos. So what's the reason? Amar Rav Ashi, tona shein dechayev katoni shein debehema. Because in that next Mishnah, first when it says shein refers to the teeth of wild animals. So if you have a wild, like we learned at the end of the previous parak, if you have a lion or a wolf or whatever, and it eats in its normal way, then you chayev for that as shein. And then after that, it mentions the shein of a behema, namely where it continues when it eats fruits and vegetables, that would be a behema because chayus are carnivores. They eat meat. They don't eat peiros v'yirokos. So for them to eat peiros v'yirokos would be something unusual. So for them, it would be keren. But for a behema, it's normal for it to eat fruits and vegetables. And why do we need to say that? Because otherwise you might think, look, after all, the pasuk says v'shilachas v'iroiksiv. The pasuk says, where a person lets go his animal in somebody else's field. And the word be'iroi is the equivalent, it actually explains the Aramaic equivalent of the word behema. So you would think, behema ain chayaloi. Maybe he's only chayav if his domestic animal causes damage. Not if he has wild animals. Okay, so maybe you could say, in other words, that you're not going to say maybe he's completely potter, that if he has wild animals, fine, you would say maybe that he's not completely potter, but maybe you would think, the Shittim Kubetzis explains, that maybe you would think that it's a tolda of shein, and therefore we need to be told that no, it's actually part of the av. In which case, Tosfos wonders then, Taka, why doesn't the Mishnah mention the toldus of shein? Here in our Mishnah, we're implying the toldus of regal. Why, Taka, in the next Mishnah, is it only mentioning the av of shein and not mentioning the toldus, for example, the animal scratching itself against the wall and knocking down the wall? Okay, Akasha. Anyway, so the point is, so Rav Ashi is explaining that the next Mishnah, when it says, Ketzer HaShein Mu'edis, and then when it continues, HaBehema Mu'edis, we're told the first words, Ketzer HaShein Mu'edis, is referring to a wild animal. And the second one is referring to, and the second one that it's more lechol peiros v'yirokos is talking about a domestic animal. And we need to be told both of them. Kamash malon dechaya b'chalal behema. We need to be told that no, chaya is included in the category of behema. The word behema sometimes in the pasuk can be used to include wild animals as well. Rashi brings, for example, we have when the Torah lists the kosher animals, the kosher land animals in Parshas Re'eh. It starts saying, Zois ha-behema asher techelu, and then it lists the 10 kosher species of animals, of which 7 of them are wild animals. Ayol, tzvi, yachmur, etc., are all wild, and nevertheless they're included in the category of behemoth. Tosfos says, actually, here really what it is it's not really quite the same thing. After all, birds are definitely not included in behemoth. And yet again, when we learn in the 5th perek, we're going to learn that birds are in this category as well. As we said in our mission, chickens, for example, are moored. So it's not really so much that we're saying that chaya b'chlal behemoth. We're saying in general that we're going to learn later on in the Masechta that when it says behema, it includes any kind of animal, any kind of living creature that you might have that you might have in your possession. Anyway, so the Gemara says yihachi halmi boyle lemisni b'reisha. The question is, in that case, then it should have said first the behema first. So first the Mishnah should say that a behemoth is moored to eat peiros v'yirokos, and then it should mention again shein, and then we would understand that means the shein of a chaya. After all, the pasuk mentions be'iroi, which means behemoth first. So why is the following Mishnah implying the chaya first? And the answer is, as the Gemara sometimes answers, hai d'asu le midrasha chaviv alei, because something that we learn out from a drasha is more precious to the Tana, more than something that we just have spelled out for us in the pasuk, and therefore the Tana wanted to mention the chaya first, even before the behemoth. Because the chaya is a drasha, because we're saying, after all, the pasuk says be'iroi, which on the face of it means only domestic animals. Only from a drasha do we learn later on in the Masechta that all animals are included. What we learn it from is basically like this. By Shabbos, the Torah tells us in the Aseres Hadibros that you're not allowed to have your shurcha v'chamurcha do work. Now, it's not only your shor v'chamur, it means all other behemoths as well. So we learn from that the same way over here. It doesn't only mean shor v'chamur, it means all other kinds of animals as well. Anyway, so that's the drasha, therefore it's mechaber to him. So the Gemara asks, ihachi, if so, reisha nami lisni ahud like siva bereisha. In that case, then in the reisha, namely in our Mishnah, then also it should be listing the one that it doesn't say explicitly first. Namely, the Mishnah should first be mentioning habehema mu'edis lahalich, that an animal is moored to break things as it walks along, for example, by brushing against them or whatever. And then it should mention where it steps on them, which is the actual regal that it says in the pasuk. And then it should do it that way. So the Gemara says, Hochi Hashta, how do you think to even make such a comparison? When it comes to the behema versus the chaya, both of them eating each in the normal way is part of the av. Because again, we said you shouldn't think that the domestic animal is an av and the wild animal is a tolda. No, both of them are equally considered av. So therefore, you can say, so the one that comes from a drasha is more precious to the Tana, and therefore he mentions it first. But over here, you're talking about an av and a tolda. Shavik av and toni tolda. Do you expect the Tana to ignore the av altogether and first discuss the tolda? Not logical. You always mention the av first. So therefore, that's a more logical reason to say that our Mishnah should begin with regal and only then discuss where it does things with its body or whatever, which is the tolda. Whereas in the next Mishnah, since you're dealing with two others, then you might as well put the one with the drasha first. Another answer you could say, since at the end of the previous parak, we finished off with regal, so therefore our Mishnah starts with regal rather than starting with behemoth, because again it has that style of ending with the last thing of starting with the last thing that we ended with. In fact, the Mephoshim will point out that really the very last thing we said in the list of Muadin in the previous Mishnah is v'hanochash. Well, that's kind of included in regal in the sense that if an animal that if a snake slithers on something and damages it while it's doing that, that would be a tolda of regal because normal for the snake to move that way. Okay. We learn in a brisa. Behema mu'edis lahalach kadavko l'shabo ketzad. What do we mean when we said in our Mishnah that a behema, that an animal is moored to walk in its normal way and break things, not just with its feet? Ketzad, what does that mean? Behema shenichnas alachatzar nizik. The animal goes into the chotzer of the nizik, because again, we've learned that regal applies only there, not in Rishos Rabim. And certainly not in Rishos Hamazik, because then he has every right to have his animal be there and the other person has no right to have his payrus there. If it damaged something with the body in the normal way of walking, so it brushed against something and broke it, or with its hair, with its fur, as it's walking along, so let's say something got stuck to its hair and broke, If the animal caused damage, and again, we're talking about all of this inadvertently, it didn't mean to cause damage, with the saddle that's on it, so the saddle got caught on something and broke it, or with a bundle of with a bundle of merchandise, with sacks of merchandise that are on it, or with the bit that's in the animal's mouth that got caught on something, or the bell around the animal's neck, or a donkey causes damage with the burden that's carrying on its back, which Tosfos points out, when you saddle up a donkey and you put burdens on it, they're not usually tied as tightly as with other animals. So that's why even though we already mentioned the shlif shaleha, which means sacks of merchandise on it, we have to spell out again by a chamur. You would think it's not as tightly attached. Maybe it's not considered like his goof, and nevertheless, we're saying it is. So it's not considered tsurotis, it's considered part of his actual goof, and therefore if he causes damage with it inadvertently, then it's nezik sholem, then it's reg. On the other hand, the braisa continues, Sumchus, the famous Talmud of Reb Meir, says tsurotis, as far as tsurotis, where pebbles shoot out from under the animal's feet, v'chazir shoyenova ba'ashba, or if a pig was rooting around in the trash, Rashi explains that "nover" means like it's kind of digging over there with its snout. Tosfos brings a different explanation based on Targum, that it means that it's eating. So in those cases, v'hizik, if it caused damage, mishalem nezik shalim, then you pay nezik shalim for those two. So you might ask hizik pshita. Obviously, if it caused damage while it's digging around in the trash over there, or then you pay nezik shalim. Ela ema hitis v'hizik mishalim nezik shalim. Rather, what you're right. What Sunkos means to say is, if while it's doing that, it causes pebbles to fly around, then he's also paying. Then he's paying nezik shalim, because Sunkos disagrees with the concept that we said before that tsurotis is chatzi nezik. He holds that tsurotis is nezik shalim. Now you have an interesting point that Achronim bring up. The Gemara says, The Gemara refers to tsuris as hilchsa gmiri law, meaning that we learn it as a halacha. It's explained to be halacha l'moshe misinai. Now we have a general rule that Rambam says nobody argues on a halacha l'moshe misinai. So then how is Tsumchos arguing on it? So they give a couple of answers. One of them is that maybe hilchsa gmiri law doesn't mean halacha l'moshe misinai. Maybe it means that it's a well-known halacha to the chachamim, and it's almost as strong as a halacha l'moshe misinai, but it's not actually. They give other answers as well. Maybe when the Chachamim first brought the point to the Beis Medrash, they didn't actually identify it as Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, so therefore Sumchus felt free to argue about it. Or maybe, I think the Maratz Chayus gives an answer. Sure, there's Halacha L'Moshe Misinai about Tzuris. The Halacha is that you chayav to pay. What was the Halacha L'Moshe Misinai? How much you chayav to pay? That the Chachamim argued on. That was not detailed, was not clear, and the Chachamim argued on that. Anyway, the point is, Tosfos says that there's tsuris not only of regal, there can be tsuris of shein as well. Here the pig is rooting around in the trash, finding something to eat, and while it's doing that, it causes pebbles to go flying. That would be tsuris that come from shein rather than regal, and also also the owner of the pig is going to be chayiv chatzi nezek, but according to Sumchus, he's going to be chayiv nezek trolling. Okay, the Gemara says tsuris man dechar shmayu. Where did it ever say anything? Sumchus is saying that tsuris, you pay nezik sholim, but where did the braisa until then mention tsuris that Sumchus is arguing on? If you're saying that Sumchus says this, implies that there are other tanoim who argue with him. Where did we find that? So therefore, chsuri mechsur, the braisa is missing words. V'hochi katoni. It means to say like this, tsuris ki urchayu katzi nezik. The normal kind of thing of tsuris, where an animal walks in the street and causes tsuris to go flying and they break a keli or whatever, is paying chatzi nezek. And v'chazir shoyin nova ba'ashba, the same way if the pig is rooting around in the trash or eating in the trash, the hit is and he causes pebbles to go flying, v'hizik, and he causes damage with that, m'shalim chatzi nezek, then also it's considered tsuris, and therefore the Tanakhama is implying that he's paying chatzi nezek. Sumchus saimer, no, tsuris v'chazir shoyin nova ba'ashba, v'hit is v'hizik, m'shalim nezek shalim, and Sumchus disagrees in those last two cases because he holds that tsuris, you're paying nezek shalim. So he disagrees again with what we said before, that tsuris is chatzi nezek. Okay. So now let's define more things about the difference between the animal itself causing damage versus its koyach causing damage, where again, we've established so far that sroris means the koyach of the animal. So, Tana Rabbanan, Tanagolin Shoyim Africhin Mimokim Lamokim, if chickens are flying around from one place to another, Vashibru Kalim Bakanfein, and they broke Kalim with their wings, so the wings actually touched the Kali and broke it. Mashalim, Nezek Shalim, then the owner of the chicken is paying Nezek Shalim. Beruach Shabakanfein, on the other hand, if the Kalim were damaged by the wind that came from their wings, so they were flapping their wings and that caused a keli to fall down and break, then that would be Misham and Chatzin Nezek, then that's the Tzuris and you're paying Chatzin Nezek for that. Sumchus Zomim, Nezek Shalim, again, Sumchus argues and says Nezek Shalim, because again, he holds that Tzuris, you pay Nezek Shalim. Tanya Idach, we learn in another Braisa, Tanya Golan Shoyi Mahadsin Agabe Isa, if chickens were Mahadsin on top of dough, where we said before, Mahadsin Rashi defines as Meraktin, they're dancing on it, and other Rishonim learn that it means like they're digging with their talons, with their claws in it. If they're doing that on dough, Va'agabe Peiris, or on top of Peiris, the Tinfoy Nikru, and they dirtied the dough or the peiris, or they pecked at it. Mashalim, nezek shalim. Then the owner of the chicken is paying nezek shalim, because that would be all of that is considered regal. To be exact, actually, you have the Rashba points out if they rolled around on them because they enjoy that, then that wouldn't be regal. That would be shame. Either way, this dinim are much the same. It's potter in Rosh Hashanah Abim and chayev only in Rosh Hashanah Nizim. Helu offer it service. On the other hand, if with their mahadsin, they're dancing or scratching or whatever, they kicked up dirt or pebbles and that made the dough or the peiris dirty, mashaman chatzinezek, then they're paying chatzinezek, because again that would be tsuris. Sumcho sem and nezek shalom, and again Sumcho says nezek shalom for the same reason as before. Now, Tanya Idach, then we learn a third braisa, Taunagol Shoyim Afriach Mimakim Lamakim, if a chicken was flying from one place to another, the yotzer ruach mitachas knof of the shibur es hakelim, and wind comes from under its wings and breaks kelim, because the wind, in other words, causes a keli to fall over, and the wind, the air that was stirred up causes a keli to fall over and break, mashalim chatzi nezek, then you pay chatzi nezek. So the Gemara points out, stomach rabbanon, here we have a stam b'raisa, that's like the rabbanon, where it doesn't mention Sumchus's opinion at all.
Wind came from the chicken's wound.
Yeah, in other words, the chicken was flapping its wings, and that stirred up a wind that knocked over a cave. So it didn't directly touch it, therefore that's tsuris. Now, the Pnei Yehoshua points out, each of these braises was taught in a different base medrash. So the Gemara is not wondering why we need so many braises, because every base medrash had their different style of teaching the din, and in one of them, and in two of the braises, it also explained what Sumchus hold, and in the third braise, it doesn't. But here we have one that's stam according to the Chachamim, and doesn't even mention Sumchus's opinion. Okay, Omar Rabba, Bishleima Sumchus. Now we have to understand the logic behind it, Rabba says. I can understand Sumchus's opinion. Sure, he holds that the koyach of an animal is considered exactly like its body. So the same way as you'd be chayev for what the animal does with its body, for example, pushing against it or stepping on it or touching it with its wings or whatever. So the same way you're equally chayev for what it does with its koyach. El Rabbanan, but according to the Rabbanan, what are they holding? If they hold that the koyach of the animal is the equivalent of the goof, kula nezek boy l'shalem, then you should have to pay the full nezek. We love the goofoy dummy, and if it's not considered like goofoy, chatzi nezek nami l'shalem, you shouldn't have to pay chatzi nezek either. Where are we getting this chatzi nezek from? Hada amar rava la'olam k'goofoy dummy. In fact, you can answer the tzuris or the koyach is considered like the goof, v'chatzi nezek tzuris, hilchzeg mi'la, but we have an accepted, a known halacha of chatzi nezek tzuris. So again, we can say that it means halacha l'moshe mi'sinai, that there exists such a nezek and that the person is chayev for it, but the chachamim were arguing what it means exactly. Or it can mean it's not literally halacha l'moshe mi'sinai, just it was a known halacha to the chachamim, but therefore Sumchus feels free to argue about it. Because again, nobody's going to argue on a halacha l'moshe mi'sinai. Okay. So Omar Rava. So Rava gives a rule in this connection. Now we need a little bit of background for this to understand how things work with a zov. If a zov touches anything, then that thing becomes tummy. Also, if a zov moves anything with even indirectly, then he also makes it tummy. For example, if a zov were to take a stick and use it to push a person, that other person would become tummy. Same. Well, the other person becomes an avatoma. Yeah. Directly or indirectly. Now you do have, Tosfos points out, to be exact, with a Zov, you have, let's say, if the Zov puts the stick under his armpit and pushes somebody with it, then the person is not going to become Tomei, or then the person's not going to become Tomei. He has to be holding it in his hand or some other normal part of his body. Here, in Nizokin, we're not going to be making that distinction, but still. Anyway, the point is, though, so you have cases where a Zov, where a Zov causes something to move indirectly, So now, for example, if a Zov were to throw something at a person, then what happens is the thing that he held onto and threw is a Rishon LaTruma. It's not Matame, the person that it lands on. So if a Zov were to take a rock or something and throw it at somebody, the other person remains Tahor. But if a Zov were to take a stick and push the other person, then he would become Tame. So Omar Rava, Kol Shabiz Zov Tame, any case where if a Zov does something, it makes the other person Tame. B'nizokin mishalom nezek shalim, the equivalent case with nizokin, then you're paying nezek shalim. V'chol shebe zav tahor, wherever a case where with a zav you're touching the other person and the other person remains tahor, b'nizokin mishalom chatzin nezek, then by nizokin the equivalent would be considered tzuris and you're paying only chatzin nezek. So let's say, for example, the animal directly stepped on something and broke it, then you pay nezek shalim. The equivalent of that would be a zov steps on something that's meant to be stepped on, tumas midras, the thing becomes an avatoma. On the other hand, we're saying if a zov throws something, then the thing that he threw it at is tahor. So they're the same thing, by nezik, and you're only paying chatzi nezek if the animal, let's say, takes something and throws it, which would be tzuris. So the Gemara asks, but Rav Tzuris also Lashminin. So what's Rav's Chiddush? He's telling us the concept of Tzuris. We know that already. Rav Agola Meshechas Bekoren Kamash Malon. Rav wants to tell us a Chiddush where you have actually different Gersois. So you have different understandings over here among the Rishonim, whether the word is Egla or Agola. Egla means a calf. Agola means a wagon. So the gears that we have in front of us over here is Egla Meshechas Bekoren. If you have a calf that's pulling a wagon, the point is, in other words, that now, if while the calf or other animal is pulling the wagon, the wheels of it ride over Kalim, and the Kalim broke, then you're going to be paying Nezek Shalim. Wouldn't it be considered like Tzuris? No, because the fact is, by a Zov, you would have a similar thing. That if a Zov was sitting in a wagon and the wagon rode over Kalim, and those Kalim are the kind that would be Tomei, Tumas Midras, then they do in fact become Tomei because the Zov's weight was resting on them. So that's what Rava wants to tell us. So you wouldn't consider it like Tzuris, and Rishonim explained, the Ravid, for example, explains, because it's more usual, unlike, for example, unlike Tzuris, which are a little bit unusual, and unlike, for example, in the Mishnah, we said when a dzlil is tied to, gets tangled around a chicken's feet, which is a little unusual, it's usual for an animal to be pulling a wagon, therefore we can't consider it Tzuris. It would be more like what we said before about the load on the animal's back that got tangled in something. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Chananel has a girsa over here, and other Rishonim also do, that the word is agola moshechas, and what we mean is that we mean that a wagon that's being pulled. So we're not focusing so much on the animal pulling the wagon. We're saying, for example, the same way as if a zov was pulling a wagon with somebody inside it, that other person is going to become Tomei because the zov is pulling the wagon and therefore moving the person along with him. The wagon being pulled and causing damage, then we're saying it's considered nezek shalim. So Tanya Kavasei the Rava. We learn so. Therefore, according to that Girsa, you don't know the word Bekoren, just Agola Moshechas. When a wagon, the word is not Egla, but Agola, meaning a wagon, and Moshechas that's being pulled. So Tanya Kavasei the Rava. We learn in a Braisa like what Rava says. What does it mean that an animal is moored to break things in the normal way of walking? An animal goes into the Chotzer of the Nizek, which is where you're going to be Chayav for Regel. The zika begufa derech ilocha, it caused damage with its body in the normal way by brushing against something, or with sora derech ilocha, with its hair, with something got tangled in its hair. Bu'ukav shaleha, with the saddle on it, or with shlif shaleha, or the bundle of merchandise on it, or the sacks of merchandise, or prumia shabapia, or the bit in its mouth, or bezul shabitzabara, or the bell around its neck. or a donkey with its burden, all of those we listed previously, but now we have another one, or a calf that's pulling a wagon, which is now the new one that Rava added. Meshalim, nezek cholim, then he paying nezek cholim. So you see this braisa says exactly what Rava is saying, that that case, we compare it to where we compare it to a zov, and we say the same way by a zov. Again, if a zov is sitting in a wagon that's being pulled by an animal, or according to the other girsa, if a zov himself is pulling a wagon, either way, the other thing is going to become tomei. The same way over here, we have nezek cholim for that, because it's considered the animal itself rather than the koyach of the animal. Okay, and then we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with various other cases of Tzuris, and then deal with them in more detail.